David Mead with us, author of the book Planet X, The 2017 Arrival. We're going to continue talking about the book of Revelation, how this ties into all of this, and we'll take your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. David Mead with us. We'll get to your calls as well. David, let's talk a little bit more about Revelation and how this ties into all of this. Now, if you look at Revelation, it's also end times. Is that what we're talking about here?
Right, precisely. End of days, end times. Hollywood's done some movies on this. Now, there's a very well-funded rabbi in Israel who's funded by some very wealthy Jewish Zionist interests, Rabbi Glazerson. He's a world-renowned expert in the Torah codes, and he recently found evidence of a cataclysmic strike by Nibiru in the Jewish year 5777. Now, the Gregorian calendar equivalent is October of 2016 through October of 2017. So he also found evidence in a Bible matrix of the end of days that was related to begin in 2017. So these all relate to the impact effects of these near-Earth objects. You know, a 700-meter object, you know, is 100,000 megatons. This would destroy a large state such as Virginia. If it hit the ocean, it would produce a 1,000-foot-high tsunami. So all of these end-of-days scenarios, you know, and you've got facilities to track these objects, the Catalina Sky Survey and so forth, but they have the sole purpose of monitoring. There's no facilities that can cope with an imminent asteroid strike. After detection, there's neither the technology or the time element available. And so Rabbi Glazerson has pinpointed 2017. My book agrees and pinpoints the month. And I think both scientists and Bible scholars recognize the inevitability of this scenario and, you know, that it's imminent.
What's ironic, too, is Rabbi Glazerson in his Bible codes said that Donald Trump was going to become the next president. And he said that days before the presidential election, when most people were saying it's all Hillary's.
You're right. I think it was definitely the week before, and people thought he was wrong, but he was 100% right.
Sure,
Bible codes are amazing. They you know, they operate with non-random equidistant letters, sequence extensions in the Hebrew Bible, and you know, for 3,000 years, there's been a secret code in the Bible. And it was broken by a distinguished mathematician and corroborated by world-famous academics. And it has forecasted things, you know, on a past tense basis from World War II to the Gulf War. Michael Drosnin wrote the Bible Code. And one thing that got him into that was a fellow named Eliyahu Rips disclosed in a letter to Yitzhak Rabin, the Prime Minister of Israel. He told him something like, well, you know, a mathematician has discovered a hidden code in the Bible that, you know, that appears to do this and that. And he says, the reason I'm telling you about this is that the only time, this was to the Israeli prime minister, the only time your full name, Yitzhak Rabin, is encoded in the Bible, the words assassin that will assassinate cross your name.
Yeah,
he told
I
him
remember
he
said, that.
Should not be ignored.
I remember that. And nobody took heed to that.
No, and I think it was in November 95, about a year after Rabin got the letter.
He got assassinated by somebody exactly within Israel.
That's exactly right. So it's dramatic confirmation of the reality of the codes.
All right, to the phones now we go. Let us go to Thomas in La Jolla. Hey, there you go, Thomas.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. And David Mead, wow, what an interview, and I really appreciate your research. David, my question, you've cited the Bible, but there's several versions of the Bible, and there's one Bible that was quite secret for, I guess, several hundred years, and it was the Colburn Bible, and it was transcribed, you know, generation after generation by Celtic families in the British Isles. About 20 years ago, somebody actually photocopied it or whatever, and it was released to the public. I have never been able to get a copy of this Bible, but allegedly, it explicitly refers to Planet X, like Jesus in the Colburn Bible refers to Planet X as the destroyer, and that the destroyer has come in the past and will come again. You must prepare, etc. And there's researchers in Planet X that have cited the Colburn Bible, and that's spelled K as in Kelly, O, L as in Larry, B as in Baker, R as in Radio, I, N as in Nancy. So I was wondering if you were familiar with
Well, and let me say this too, Thomas, as well, that it talks about a return, this is amazing, return of a massive space object in a long elliptical orbit around the sun, known to the Egyptians and the Hebrews as the destroyer. The Celts called it the Frightener. What do you think of that, David?
Well, yeah, that's a historical proof. That's extra evidence. You know, you always want to look for three or four sources on any story if you're a journalist, and that's one of the sources. And the other evidences are circumstantial. I mean, you know, if someone's a lawyer taking this before court, you'd have no problem on the basis of circumstantial evidence of proving this beyond a reasonable doubt to a moral certainty. I mean, you've got everything starting with the Greenbrier bunker in West Virginia. You know, a 112,000 square foot bunker was built back in the 60s, to the hundreds that exist nowadays, to the $6 trillion missing from the Pentagon budget, to the Doomsday Seed Vault at the top of the planet in a remote archipelago of Svalbard managed by Norway, to all the evidence that we have, photographic evidence, insider information. You know, we have circumstantial evidence beyond a reasonable doubt.
You should be able to find a copy of the book, Tom, The Colburn Bible, by going to Marshall Masters' website, as a matter of fact, because and it's in two parts, but you should be able to find it. Scary stuff, though, David, isn't it?
You know, it is. And here's the thing. NASA doesn't even have a mandate to develop planetary defenses. It never has. You know, the military is mired in a war on terror and grossly over-budgeted in that war, but there is no mandate for space development, and there's no money. And, you know, deterrence probably is beyond the capability of conventionally chemically-powered spacecraft. You'd have to have a nuclear-powered spacecraft that used high-efficiency propulsion, like plasma engines, and the Prometheus project is under development, but that's 10 years off. And so you'd have power and thrust requirements similar to the Jupiter Icy Moons Orbiter spacecraft. In other words, the technology is not currently available. This may be the reason for the current lack of detection funding.
Can we assume that with the Doomsday Seed Vaults and things like that, that they really know something they're not telling us?
Right, and that's not the only one. There's the Millennium Seed Bank in West Sussex near London, England, UK. It's the largest seed bank in the world, long term. It's about 100 times bigger than the global seed vault, and it provides space for the storage of, I would say, billions of seed samples in a nuclear bomb-proof multi-story underground vault. And the aim of these places is to store every plant species possible, and they hope to be at a 25% milestone by 2020. But at the top of the planet, you've got these Svalbard, you know, Doomsday Seed Vault. That can hold about 2.5 billion seeds. And in other words, about 500 seeds from each of the close to 5 million varieties of crops. And that place has already withstood an earthquake. It's protected by high walls of layers of concrete, doors with steel plate. And the permafrost is an insurance policy against system failures. So I would say if you had a world economy collapse and people actually had to access, deep underground bases, and when Planet X is eventually visible to the naked eye, this is the reason for the establishment of these elaborate facilities.
Let's go to Mike in St. Louis now. Mike, it's your turn. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Hey, listen, Nostradamus, with all the predictions he made, did he ever have any mention of this?
To be honest, I'm not much of an Nostradamus researcher. He probably...
I believe he did, David, in the many interviews I've done with John Hoag. Very, very similar things, too. So you have a lot of different sources, as you've been saying the same thing.
Right. I consider you know the apocalypse a book of supernatural origin, and I consider the scientific evidence that we've seen very, very important, and people like this that see into other realms and so forth. I suppose that's a third confirmation. So you know you have to look at all sources to be on the alert. You know I think we're in a war of light against darkness, both in politics and everything. And occasionally we get signals, and that's probably one of them.
When you were talking about John, who wrote the book of Revelation, how did these things come to him? Was it an angel or a dream? And as you said, it was like he was transferred into time.
Right. He was in prison, serving a prison sentence under a certain Roman emperor for just simply you know, being an apostle to the Gentiles. And he and Paul wrote a good deal of the New Testament and the epistles. But he was apparently, it was a Sunday, he called it the Lord's Day, and he was had what's called a vision, an open vision. And you're right, according to his documentation in the book of Revelation, an angel appeared to him and was directed to reveal this information to him, you know, from the Son of God himself. So, This is probably the highest authority we can go on, and we can still look at these other, you know, collateral sources. But because we have both scientific indications, astronomical indications, we have multiple weather indications, because all of this is coming together. You know, this is 70 years since Israel, UN authorized, I think it was November 29th, 1947.
48.
Oh, well, yeah, 48 Israel became a nation, and but the actually the declaration was signed in
was before that. Yeah.
You're right, it was May of 48. So
and that's when the clock started, right?
That's a clock, absolutely.
Gosh. Are we going to be able to make it out of this?
Well, you know, like I say, it's an unstoppable train. And it's going to be very, as I would say, we're very fortunate in a way to be in this particular generation. And if you look, just look at the amazing things that have happened, you know, after the debacle of the last 8 years, you know, Americans with sense have watched with horror the results of that administration. And now you've got a new set of policies that's going to change all this. And I agree with Trump in many, many areas, but he's going to cause utter chaos. Mexico will be up in arms about the cost of the wall. Now, I support it 1,000%. But look at China. It is time to get tough with them, but the trade deals are going to be dismantled. China will react emotionally and not logically. Trump, as president, is going to shake the system. He is a mover and shaker. He is totally fearless. And you look at historical records, it seems like in the Bible, the Old Testament particularly, God uses very strange and unusual people. You look at the Israelites were enslaved for 70 years by someone called Nebuchadnezzar, and then Cyrus allowed the construction of a Jewish temple. You had Pharaoh who enslaved Egypt for 400 years, and then in 70 A.D., Israel had Jerusalem burned to the ground by Titus. And, you know, in recent history, you know, you had Hitler, who was demonically energized, but the result of World War II was the safe housing of the Jewish people and the new state of Israel. So it seems like some mysterious ways create these, kick off these new time frames that we have to deal with.
Jeff in Culver City, California. Jeffrey, take it away.
How you doing, George and Mr. Mead?
Great.
Yes, the book of Revelation is my favorite book out of all the chapters of the books in the Holy Christian Bible. And what I find fascinating and intriguing is that Jesus' manifestation and apparitional appearance to John on the Isle of Patmos, and what Jesus, was able to tell John and even show him glimpses of the horrible future ahead. My question is this, Mr. Mead. The last chapters of Revelation talks of unbelievable horror, destruction, devastation, and misery. How is this possible, contrasted with what those who believe Jesus, you know, that loves everyone and wants to save all 8 billion people on the planet, can't have it both ways? So everybody can't be saved. So what's your comment on that?
Well, very, very good point. It's a book of judgment, But in the end, and God really, in the book of Revelation, is primarily dealing with Israel. There's three major wars that occur in the book of Revelation. They all center around Israel. But you've got, there's some very, I'll put it this way. Queen Elizabeth II told Paul Burrell, who's a former servant of the British royal household some years ago, she said there are dark forces in this country, in this England she was referring to, of which we know not of. So you have in the world today a very strange system. You've got Masonic powers and occult factions within the governments of Britain, America, and Europe, and they hold a great many secrets. And a lot of those very guarded secrets are revealed in my book. You've got two royal families in Great Britain that think they're descendants of Israel, but they're not. This is the House of Windsor, which is Elizabeth, Charles, and William, and the Scottish House of Stuart Spence, the late Princess Diana. The arranged marriage of Diana and Charles was of ancient design. And the Book of Revelation has about three or four major topics. One is World War III. But remember, at the end, in the very end, God wins. It's good to know that good, is over evil at the very end. But it takes quite a struggle before it happens. Because also in the book of Revelation, you've got an individual who is a world ruler. He has about 33 titles in the Old Testament, 13 in the New. He's called the Prince That Shall Arise of Daniel chapter 9. So I think some citizen of the Roman Empire, and I mean European royalty and descent, he's not American, this person will somehow ascend to a world stage during this 3.5-year Book of Revelation, Great Tribulation, and he's going to take over the United Nations, and he will rule the world. And I'm writing a couple of articles on this next week for PlanetXNews.com that probably reveal the likely, statistically almost probable identity of this individual. And again, he's not anyone that you would think of in or around the United States. He's not Trump. He's not the current president. He's not an American.
Would we know his name?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Let me put it this way. There was a book written some years ago. I didn't write it. It's available, I think, in print version. It's called The Antichrist and a Cup of Tea, and it's about the House of Windsor. So that'll give you a clue.
Okay, very good. Now, where do we get your book, David?
Well, the book right now is on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
Oh, good for you.
It's an e-book. It's printed, audio version. It's available in England, in Australia, the United States.
Who published for you, or did you self-publish?
I did self-publish, but I used a publisher. I used a publisher to put it all together, and that group was called Ryan Levesque of eBookit in Boston.
All right, very good. David, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls as we deal with Planet X, the 2017 arrival. Let's find out from David where he thinks it is exactly, if he can tell us that, and then we'll take your final calls. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Okay, welcome back to our final segment with David Mead and your phone calls as well as we talk about his work, Planet X. Welcome back, David Mead with us, Planet X, our final segment. We'll get to your calls, too. David, so where do you think Planet X is right now?
A good point, good question. And I do want to just comment for 20 seconds on that last caller. A very good question for him.
Sure.
And a lot of people question Donald Trump, and they say, who really is he? Well, let me tell you, he's a great man. He's brilliant. He knows everything. He is not part of the New World Order. He's not a globalist. And until he came into being, Putin, President Vladimir Putin, whom I admire to some degree, he is not part of the New World Order either. And that's why the mainstream media is so against Mr. Putin. So I just want to make those two points. And
in about 7.5 hours, he gets sworn in.
Absolutely. I watched him at the Lincoln Memorial, a very moving ceremony, no matter what your ideology. He spoke at the Lincoln Memorial, and they played some music. So, but getting to your question,
where is it? Yeah,
yeah. It was an amazing performance. But I have a chapter in my book called "Will the Real Planet X Please Stand Up?" And just to answer your question and go back a little bit for about a minute to give a complete answer. You know, science admits quite a few points in favor of Planet X. You know, we have the Oort cloud, which is 50 to 200,000 AU, or astronomical units, from our sun. So if our sun were part, which it is, of a binary system in which two gravitationally bound stars orbit a common center of mass, this interaction could obviously disturb the Oort cloud on a periodic basis and send comets toward us. You know, science admits there was an asteroid impact that extinguished the dinosaurs 65 million years ago, and the Tunguska event in Russia in 1908, that was 1,000 times the power of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima, flattened 80 million trees, 830 square miles. Now, science recently has said, well, there's a recently discovered dwarf planet named Sedna, has an extra long, unusual elliptical orbit, ranges between 76 and 975 AU, and 1 AU is the distance between the Earth and the Sun. So Sedna's got a 12,000-year orbit, and the discoverer, Mike Brown of Caltech, has stated that Sedna's location doesn't make any sense. He says Sedna shouldn't be there. There's no way to put Sedna where it is. It never comes close enough to be affected by the Sun, but it never goes far enough away to be affected by other stars. So it means there is a massive unseen object that's responsible for its mysterious orbit. Now, Brown is part of a Caltech team that claims to have discovered the ninth planet in 2016. Pluto was demoted. It's no longer considered a planet. Now, Brown's calculations suggest that this ninth planet is about 10 times the mass of the Earth. So science knows that we have binary star systems. One-third to two-thirds of the stars in the Milky Way are binary systems. Some estimates are as high as 74%. And red dwarfs are common. In fact, they're the most common type of star in the galaxy. So the existence of Planet X is quite in line with the current knowledge base. But to wrap it up, this so-called ninth planet that they recently disclosed in January of this year, or last year, the NASA people, it's a combination, I think, of information and disinformation. It's what I would call in the intelligence community a Bush League type of propaganda. My advice, don't major on minors. I wouldn't study their announcement or pay too much attention to it. The real Planet X is in the vicinity of Mars. It's fast approaching Earth. It has no direct relationship to this recent, quote, discovery. And this discovery, I think, is just one more piece of evidence that the powers that be are running scared and making mistakes as they go.
Well, you may be right about that, but we will find out soon enough, I guess, David, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been, you know, as I say, photographic analysis of, there was a professor that was flying down to South America back in April of 2015. It was sunset. It's on the Pacific side of Central America. And another analyst, not me, but another analyst used a Starry Night professional version and did a field of view analysis and a gamma test and a luminous test, all sorts of things. But he noticed, because this professor sent the raw data file to him, he said there's what appears to be wings on the object that's clearly behind the sun. And he said, well, you know, this is deeply disturbing because gas tails of comets follow solar winds. They're not visible till the comet's orbit is inside of Jupiter, at which point the luminosity of the sun makes the tail of the comet or the planet visible. So this object is clearly Planet X by deductive logic and process of elimination. Back then, it was between Mars and Jupiter. It's not in the outer reaches of the solar system. It can clearly be seen from the southern hemisphere. And as of April 2015, it was close enough to the sun that the sun's light is reflected in the tail, making it appear like wings, like the ancient photographs of it.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. In the time we have left, we will go to Richard in New York. Welcome to the program, Richard. Good to have you with us.
Hello, George and Dave. God bless you guys for doing this program tonight.
Thank you.
A couple of months ago, George, I called you and I told you that one of the two witnesses before the Great Tribulation was Michael the Archangel appearing through the form of John. When you read the book of Revelation, it is actually the work of Michael the Archangel appearing through John on the Isle of Patmos. There's another saying by Jesus that I would send unto you another comforter, even unto you, the Spirit of Truth, who the world would not see, neither would they recognize him. Well, that second comforter is the first of the two witnesses. They did build the third sacred temple. It's been built in the United States. It was started in the 1940s. Down a dirt road jammed up against a high range of Rocky Mountains. And in that, it was a log cabin, actually, perfect. There were huge amounts of material put out, and these were not a channeled material. And neither am I a Mason, nor am I a Knights Templar, nor am I a globalist. But there were 20 huge volumes put out. These would blow away Nostradamus, Edgar Cayce, to make them look like kindergartners. But there is one book that most people don't have that would have maybe the other 20 volumes. And maybe in the world there might be 20 people who have this one little volume. And in it he describes a date of September 17th as a cutoff point. And that the world would be given another 5 weeks after that point to make up their mind to make a mysterious turn. And that's out there, and nobody has known about it. I've spoken about this since the early 60s and spoken in colleges and every place else, and it was like talking to a brick wall. So you may have tonight a piece of astounding evidence given to you for those of your readers who might want to look at this, because inside of the Great Pyramid, and I'm not a Freemason, nor do I like them, there appears three steps. The last of the three steps is actually a three-foot-high block of stone. It takes you into the antechamber, which is the medulla oblongata, which is the golden reed mentioned in the Bible. It's a filter. It's also a filter and a step-up transformer, taking atoms in your body to produce the aura around your head. And those are related to certain things that are related to the 12 stars and the 12 tribes, et cetera, et cetera. It goes down very, very small. You would not believe it. But those books are out there, and I'll bet David has never heard of it, nor does he know who they are. But the two witnesses did build the third sacred temple. It's done. It's been built.
All right, well, let's find out. David, do you?
I haven't heard that rendition of that story before, but it certainly is very interesting because he mentioned September 17th, and a good friend of mine, Daniel Manson, who has studied the Great Pyramid, said, indeed, that's what it does point to, September 17th of 2017. And he also mentioned 5 weeks later, which is the end of October. And if you read my book, and I haven't even gotten into it because it's such startling information, it would blow your mind. But what the after effects of Planet X and what actually happens at the end of October, which happens to be 5 weeks after this gentleman, the exact period of frame of time he mentioned, is in my book, and I did not know about this.
It's going to be an interesting year, isn't it, David?
Oh, absolutely. Nothing like it.
Text and tweets. Tom, what do you have for us?
One is from Marcia in Manhattan. Can you please ask David if he thinks Planet X will be or create the end of the world?
The end of the world. Is it a planet killer, David?
Well, you know, about 10 international papers, British tabloids and so forth, picked up on my book independently. I didn't promote it, but they wrote this. And they said an American researcher by the name of David Mead, and even the Washington Post came up and Prof to commented on it, and it just got some AOL news. And some of the articles, the British tabloids were pretty conservative, but some of the American publications were, really off the hip, shooting off the hip like cowboys. And some of them said, well, David Mead said the world is going to end. Well, you know, the world's going to be here in 1,000 years. All this is a cataclysm. I mean, it's a major, major cataclysm. It's the story of the century. But on the other hand, it's not the end of the world. Your chances of survival are pretty good. They're better than 1 out of 2. And if you know enough about it, your chances are about 99%. So it's not the end of the world.
Joe in Exeter, Pennsylvania happens to be a first-time caller. You're on the air with us, Joe. Go ahead.
This is quite an honor. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, great.
And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, you and Tom Danhauser, for shining a light on things like this.
Well, you're welcome.
This is scary stuff.
But it sure is.
My main question for Mr. Mead and Major Doom, the remote viewing guy, mm-hmm. never goes into details about this.
Ed Danes.
Other than like Arizona, Colorado, and the United States, what are the safest places to be on planet Earth in order to survive? Can he summarize that for
us? All right, sure thing. And you know, David, not a lot of people are flexible. They can't just pick up and go, but what do you recommend?
Right. Well, there's good books out there on strategic relocation, but you don't have to do it. You don't have to panic at this point. You don't have to do anything right now. You just wait and watch. At the end of September, early October, you'll get some definite signals that will cause you to move. And the move can be temporary, and you can wait and see exactly what happens. Because a lot of it depends. 73% of this planet's surface is water. And if these asteroids, and there's more than one of them, but if they hit water, it depends on where they hit. Are they going to hit near Puerto Rico? Are they going to hit near Hawaii? Are they going to hit the Pacific Ocean? So part of the problem is we don't know. NASA, I'm sure, knows exactly. They know everything, but they're not releasing the information. But we don't know exactly. We know the timing. We know the year. I know the month. But and it's confirmed in every single logical respect. So I would say wait. I would say wait. Do a what's called this the preppers call a bug out plan. Have a plan to get at least 500 feet above sea level and at least a couple hundred miles inland on short notice, and you should be okay. The Ozarks is great. Arizona and Colorado are fantastic. There's many areas that are inland that are just fine.
Then there are some people, David, who will simply say, "What happens, happens. I'll take it."
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. Steve Quayle one time commented on just your point, which is excellent. And he said, you know, he said, it's funny. He said, there's two groups of people in this world. And he said, some of them you can talk to about a topic like this, and it just goes over their head. And they have ears, but they don't listen. And he said, the reason that is, he said, you know, and then there's us that are totally different breed, your listeners, yourself, myself. But Steve Quayle was talking about the other people, and he said the problem with them is, he said, they have rejected truth in one form or the other all of their life, so they can no longer even see.
So true. A couple more calls. Let's go to Cornelius in Louisiana. Hi, Cornelius.
Hey, George and David, and, of course, our great friend Tommy Danheiser.
You're back in the saddle.
Yeah. But anyway, I don't know, Mr. Meade, if you saw this show called The Event. They always put these shows on TV and stuff like that where aliens have come to the planet, they disguise themselves as humans, and at the end of the show, they have a planet coming into Earth's orbit or area and stuff, and it causes earthquakes and tsunamis and tidal waves, and that's the way it ended, and just like Person of Interest on CBS. So I know the government is watching us through different means and stuff like that. So I'd like for you to comment on that, David, and God bless you. Come to Mardi Gras.
I'd love to. My wife keeps talking about that. I've never been. But anyway, yeah, here's the thing. Let me put it this way. Queen Elizabeth, I made that comment about her earlier, and she spoke that to her major domo, a member of her household. And, you know, these people, it's very sporting of them to warn us. Hollywood does this indirectly with images. You're never going to get quite an on-point film from them, and I think it's because they're owned by major, you know, blackout media. On the other hand, you've got independent groups. DirecTV called me the other day, and they're going to fly a film crew out here and do a four-hour interview and a 90-minute documentary. So the mainstream media is not going to report on this. The Today Show in Australia asked me to be a guest. I said, fine. The Today Show in New York will never ask me to be a guest. So it's the mentality of the people. It goes back to the Steve Quayle, you know, theorem on people, which is very true.
Let's take another quick call. James, truck driving out here in L.A. Go ahead, James.
Hi, I know you have a lot of references and you've been doing a lot of studying, but as far as the Bible, decoding and all of that, how much do you put into that? Because I got references from the Bible that's saying all of Israel isn't Israel, and the people that are in Israel will trample it down to the last day. So how much emphasis of the Bible part do you put on it?
Well, the book of Revelation is the toughest part of the entire Bible. I mean, I studied it for 20 years before I barely understood it, and I still don't understand all of it. So it is a very difficult book to understand. Now, my book helps demystify the book of Revelation tremendously because I get into it. But in Planet X, if you understand Planet X, you can understand the book of Revelation. But you really can understand everything if you understand that. So I agree. I agree the Bible is a very, very, very difficult book, and it's very confusing. And but God, remember, God's dealing primarily with Israel, and apparently it's kind of hard to get their attention because it takes three wars before they finally get their attention to culminate in the Battle of Armageddon. So the book of Revelation is dealing with Israel. And Jerusalem, by the way, is 3,000 feet above sea level. Pretty safe place.
David, we're out of time, but stay in touch with us. You do great work, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, you got it. The name of the book, Planet X, the website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, of course, we're going to watch things unfold in Washington, D.C. for a couple hours. We'll have special reports and guests. And then, of course, those special open lines. And also Mark Zakrie joins us to talk about some things going on with space and the Twilight Zone and all that. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.